Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hello and welcome to the Dork Forest. I'm Jackie Cation, your host. And the websites, JackieCation.com, DorkForest.com, TheDorkForest.com if you like a determiner, and FamilyPetAncestry.com if you like a joke URL that I bought that points to JackieCation.com. Because Family Pet Ancestry, when you want to know if your cat came over on the Mayflower. Anyway, let's do the credits. Mike Rickberg composed and sang that song you just heard. He sings with his wife, Sarah. At the end, he will sing his words to the Mexican hat dance. Patrick Brady's going to fix this audio, and Vilmos fixes my website, JackieCation.com. At JackieCation.com, many things can happen. There is, of course, links to my other podcast and the Dork Forest. My other podcast is called The Jackie and Laurie Show, and it is on the Nerdist Network. Everything's available on iTunes. Stitcher has probably uploaded it. SoundCloud and all things comedy has The Dork Forest. I don't know how you found it. I just thank you that you have. Anyway, but on JackieCation.com, there's other unique things. There's the store, which you can get the t-shirts, CDs, and my DVD of my stand-up comedy, and then Ranger of the Dork Forest t-shirts, and regular Dork Forest t-shirts, and a Spooky Reading Girl t-shirt, which is in reference to one of my jokes. You can see my calendar, where I'm doing stand-up comedy next. This week I am going to Florida for an indie comedy festival on the 21st in Orlando, and then on the 23rd I'll be in San Francisco doing a live episode of something that's listed on my website. You might want to check that out. For Sketchfest and I think Audible. Anyway, good times. In other news, or CISO, I can't remember. Check my website, JackieCation.com, for all of that stuff. Also, there's a possibility on JackieCation or TheDorkForest.com to donate to The Dork Forest. If you enjoy the program and want to donate, there's a PayPal link and you can send me some cash if you like. I appreciate it enormously. You can donate monthly. I have not made that easy. Go for it if you like. And there's also an Amazon portal on dorkforest.com. I added it. And also jackiecation.com. So if you want to order, all you have to do is you either click on the Amazon tiny icon on the front page, or you go to the support the page, support the show page on jackiecation.com, and there's a banner. On dorkforest.com, there's just a link in the menu. All it is a portal to Amazon. You order normal from Amazon, and the Dork Forest gets a kickback. Other than that, there are premium episodes, which are live episodes that I taped in front of live audiences. There's about 10 of them. They're on thedorkforest.bandcamp.com. They are $2 a piece because they cost me a couple of bucks, so I charge you a couple of bucks. There are also some free things on there and a storytelling album. So, there's probably more to it, but I say let's get into it because it's a great episode. Hey, it's Jackie Cation. I am in a hotel in Madison, Wisconsin, with a guy I knew. College. What was the name of your, what was the name of the comic strip?
Wildlife.
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 I meant to bring it. Because I clipped one in college, favorite one.
Which one was that?
I don't remember. I just remember how adorable it was, and I thought it struck a nerve.
Oh.
I'm here with John Kovalik, ladies and gentlemen. Dork Tower, dorktower.com, Dork Forest. That's how we rehooked up 11
yes.
years ago.
We swapped t-shirts.
You're due for another one because you're finally doing the show.
Oh, lovely.
So you get a free t-shirt. I don't have any with me.
Oh.
Okay. I will mail you one.
That would be delightful.
It'll all work out. Maybe you'll get a Spooky Reading Girl t-shirt. Maybe you have an inner Spooky Reading Girl.
Ooh.
So Dork Tower is your webcomic.
Yes.
And then you do art for all the Munchkin.
All of Munchkin.
Games.
I've drawn, Steve Jackson Games' Munchkin.
Oh, right, and other Steve Jackson games.
And other
too.
Shea Geek,
we have that. Do you have Ninja Burger? No, it's not.
No, I did not do Ninja Burger. That's Greg Hyland.
And that's not even Steve Jackson.
No,
there we go. Is it a Steve Jackson?
It was. If it's not anymore, I'm pretty sure it was.
Well, you're in the biz, so you know.
Oh, man. This is embarrassing.
You know that I say that, and then, yeah. But whenever anybody says anything show busy to me, I still don't know what it is. I never know what anything is.
I have drawn, though, at this point, over 5,500 Munchkin cards in the last 15 years. This is the 15th anniversary of Munchkin.
Happy anniversary, Munchkin.
Thank you, says Spike.
Says, and you drew the apple.
I drew the apple. I did a lot more than the apple, but yes, apples to apples. I wrote all the flavor text for apples to apples. For many years, because the flavor text idea was mine. When apples to apples first started, the rest of the out-of-the-box company did not want to put flavor text. Well, actually, they just wanted to make the apples cards as simple as they could so everybody could understand all of them.
Right.
And I was a Magic the Gathering player. This was going back 18 years now, something like that, close to 20.
Right.
And I was a Magic
the
Gathering
1800s.
Player.
Yes. Yes.
And I said, hey, wait a second. There's this thing called flavor text, and if we put it on a card, we can throw any card in the universe there, and people will know what it is. Elizabeth Barrett Browning, for example.
Oh, right. Flavor text being the definition, essentially, of whatever someone has just read, and you're like, well, I don't know who that is.
Exactly.
And you're like, yeah, you kind of do. Let me flavor it up for you.
And so the other three members of the company said, okay, smartass, you write it all.
Oh, my gosh.
And so for weeks, this is when Apples to Apples was first brought to us. Which was
how many cards initially?
500, I think.
Oh my God, you wrote flavor text for 500 cards.
Yes, and that turned into thousands, but not 5,000 at a certain point. And so, yeah, I would just be on the couch at our house, and I'd have my laptop, open up the files and just go through trying to think of something clever to say about all of these cards.
Right, something at the very least interesting and informative.
Yeah, and I would yell at Judith, my wife, my long-suffering, lovely wife, honey, what's funny about mud? And so this conversation would go back and forth for weeks. And yeah, so all of my friends in the industry give me a lot of hassle. Oh, you drew the logo. Oh, you drew the apple.
Right.
Also, there was, by the way,
hundreds of hours.
There was an orange at one point. Initially,
Apples to Apples had an orange involved?
Yes. Initially, Apples to Apples was called Apples and Oranges. And that name was taken.
Oh,
so we couldn't do it. So there's a poor, sorry drawing of an orange who's like the Pete Best of gaming, this close to fame, and just never got there.
I love the anthropomorphication of your drawings. Yes. You know, I used as my profile because I was your practice drawing one day, remember?
Yes.
You drew me slaying a dragon.
Yes.
And Andy had it framed, and it's in our house.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yes. It's sure. So, Jankovalik, you enjoy games.
Yes.
In addition to being instrumental in other people's games. So, what? Now, do you want to do this D&D rabbit hole? Are you going to
anything. It's like gaming is my...
Well, you're old school. You are a dork luminary here in Madison, Wisconsin, first of all.
Even older than that. I mean, I don't want to sound like too old, but I bought, when I was... I grew up in England.
Okay.
I was actually born in Manchester, as you can tell from the accent.
It's an amazing British accent, by the way.
My wife can actually do a better British accent than I can at this point.
Where was she raised?
Ellsworth, Wisconsin. So I started gaming in school in England, where everybody was playing with these little 20-millimeter plastic Airfix World War II figures.
Okay.
Desert Rats versus the Desert Fox.
Right. It does sound like you were raised in the 50s. And yet it wasn't.
This was
in the late 70s.
Late 70s, yeah. Yes. Very late 70s.
Right. Please. But I always think of England as the early 50s always. Them just reeling from beating Hitler.
And since Brexit, it probably will be.
And so, with Trump, they'll get to fight Hitler again. It's going to be great.
Let's talk more gaming.
Exactly. No kidding.
I started, and in England at the time, in Britain, you had rules you could buy for these little figures, which I'd never seen before. So you could go to a shop on the main street, high street, and there would be a set of rules published for playing World War II miniature war games with plastic tanks and plastic figures.
What?
And I thought this was incredible. It just blew my mind.
It's still incredible.
Yeah.
Did it have a name? What was the name of this game?
Just this particular game, I'm trying to remember the name. It wasn't a particularly good set of rules. I found better ones very soon afterwards.
Okay.
So
the people who made the little HeroClix things didn't make, and that's not what they are. Obviously. No.
These are just little plastic,
army guys, right?
Yeah, army guys.
Yeah.
They're tiny, like 20 millimeter means about, I'm like making an inch.
Yeah, like inch high. Army guys, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then you would buy tanks, and if you were a kid in Britain at the time, you just, an Airfix tank, and you would glue these together and paint them. And these rules were made by a different company, and they just let you play with these. And a lot of different companies made rules like this.
Right, they're like, no, play my rules.
Yes, very.
It's essentially, gamers have always grown up and been mocked for saying, no, play my game. And only in the last 15 years has everyone just embraced it and go, no, we still want to play games. I don't care if I'm 40. Leave me alone.
I know. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
So from there, I discovered board games, and these were like very complicated historical board games published by a company, an American company called SPI. And I found these at a model shop, and all of a sudden, there are these little cardboard counters you could punch out. Fun, and put on these hex grids, and some of them
God, you sound like Andy. You're like, you get to punch out a lot of different things. That's awesome.
This is our life.
Yes.
And thank you for understanding
us. You're in a safe
space.
The safest of all spaces.
And so at that point, I played these games for a while along with the miniatures games, and I was about 14, 15 at the time. And we would travel from Bristol, which was actually a city called Glastonbury. The biggest city anybody's heard of in the U.S. It would be Bristol to it. But we'd travel from Glastonbury to London every couple of weeks just to get the big city. It's only a couple of hours away, a few hours away. I think it was like maybe a three-hour drive, which in England is huge. In the U.S., that's like, I'm going to pop down and get some milk.
Right.
I'd heard about a shop in London, an actual bona fide game store in Hammersmith, London, called Games Workshop.
Okay. Do you think it's still there?
It's not still there. The original shop is not still there, but Games Workshop has become huge since then. Warhammer.
There we go.
Yeah, Warhammer 40K, yes. But back in the day, there was just a gaming shop like any other. Hammersmith, yes, one of the outlying regions of London.
Right.
And I would just pop in there when we'd go to London and my little mind exploded.
Right.
It was a place you could get all these different kinds of games.
Yeah.
And that's where I discovered a small, tiny white box with the words Dungeons and Dragons on the cover.
Oh.
And three
and
little pamphlets. Three little pamphlets were sold by Games Workshop in a box.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, they had a little photocopied piece of paper next to this, which essentially said, "What is role-playing?" And you see this kind of thing in so many role-playing games anymore. And it's so useful because right away I got it. They showed you a map of a dungeon, a small photocopied dungeon, and next to it was the dialogue that the players were saying between the games master, the dungeon master, and the players.
Okay.
And right away I got this, and I just wanted this so badly. And the art was horrible.
Yeah.
The rules were bad. I think were they even typeset? I think they were just typed out. And it was this really cheap little box. But all of a sudden, the potential became very clear to me.
Right.
I couldn't stand it. I got this. And I got back to school, and I formed in 1979 my school's first role-playing society.
Wow. Nice. I suppose if you go from playing with army guys, D&D makes sense to some extent. Tabletop role-playing.
Yeah, well,
because you're already playing imagination, and you're like, I'm doing this.
Yes.
I'm doing this.
And actually, that's where Dungeons & Dragons came from, a couple of gamers in the Midwest.
Oh, I vaguely remember that.
Were military war gamers.
And
they essentially built Dungeons and Dragons from some of their.
Because they wanted dragons and orcs.
Who doesn't?
Why wouldn't you?
Exactly.
And last episode was with my brother. We spoke almost entirely about Tolkien. And so it was pretty great.
Nice.
But it does make sense that it would go from playing Army Guys, but D&D is Army Guys, but with a dungeon master.
Yes.
Who can call it, where you're just like, no, see the trajectory, I would have got you. See, now there's a dungeon master who can say, yeah, he got you, or yep. he didn't get you. And why don't you roll a die and tell me if he got you, because I can't tell.
Yes.
And so, yes. Yeah, that's, I mean, which is a great description of how to play tabletop gaming. It makes much more sense.
It's yeah. it's funny because right now I'm starting with 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons.
Okay.
I've kept active in role playing, but I've not run actually Dungeon Mastered a game for something like 30 years. I just don't have time.
So have you and played other people's?
I have, yes.
What editions? Like 2nd edition?
I mostly 2nd edition, but it really kind of skipped from 1st edition, which came out while I was still in school.
Right.
Which I've got my original volume signed by Gary Gygax.
Oh my God.
Wrote the introduction to the very first Dork Tower comic book.
What?
Yes.
Is that still in print? The very first Dork Tower comic book with the introduction by
eBay
Gary Gygax?
Or something.
Okay.
Like that,
I will look into that because, you know, Andy Sigline is a Gary Gygax quote.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So, well, yes. Why would you? The amount of emailing.
Anyway, so it was Gary and Dave Arneson up in the Twin Cities.
Yeah.
But, so I played a lot of 1st edition, kind of skipped over 2nd edition. I kind of fell out of role-playing a bit when I started college, then got back into it with 3rd edition, 3rd, 3.5, Pathfinder. Other people were running at the time.
I'm still playing a 3.5 game.
I love 3.5 and Pathfinder, which is essentially 3.75.
Right.
I wouldn't run them. They're a little too fiddly for the way I think.
Mm-hmm.
And 4th edition was not my game.
No, 4th edition had terribles, according to various D&D people.
The people who liked it liked it. So it wasn't a bad game. It just was not my game.
Right.
To me, it felt a little bit like trying to simulate a video game.
Right. It was trying to do that.
Right.
Is what I heard that, and it was hit and miss as far as success.
And yeah, some people loved it, and God bless them, and that's great. There's a lot of different games out there people can play. But when 5th came, when 5th hit,
would you recommit?
Oh my goodness. Again, I just loved it. I've not felt this excited about Dungeons & Dragons since 1st edition Advanced D&D. It's beautiful. It's elegant. It's easy to run. It's fun to run.
Okay.
There's a lot of role playing that comes into it. It's my game. And so it got me so excited. I actually ran a couple of sessions for my nieces and nephews and they loved it. And now I've actually got a group of friends here in Madison who want to learn it. And so half of them, three of them have role played before, three of them have not role played before.
Well, that's a big group.
Yes. Well, I'm guessing that because we're all adults now, we'll probably at best get four of us together at any one time.
Oh, so you're going to do that?
Yeah, we're going to do
I'm
the quorum.
In a couple of those games where you're just like, if you can play, play, if you can't.
Yes.
That was, I've done two Pathfinders like that. And I think one Champions.
Yeah. And so if the player's not there,
it's not the end of the...
Yeah, their characters are not in danger. They're just off doing other things.
Right, they weeded off.
Yes, and, hopefully we'll get the group together as a group once every month or so, and then maybe do a second game.
Now, when you game, do you do it? Is it an all-day thing?
No.
Once
no,
a couple of months?
I do not have time. I work in the game industry. I don't have time for that.
Right, you don't have time to game. You have work to do.
This is, I would do it in like a
three-hour
session,
chunk?
7 to 10.
Okay.
Something is doable.
Oh, early night.
Yes.
Early evening. Okay.
Yes, because it's, we're all adults. This is, when I was in college, I used to do all-night gaming. We used to play this board game called Air War, which is, again, one of these old SPI games where you punch out the counters.
Okay.
And we would have these dogfights that would last all night, and we would see the sun come up. And
what?
I kind of miss that, but at the same point in time, I like being an adult much more.
Yeah. It's. I will say this, as Andy has scheduled our Eberron game, it's usually every 6 weeks, and we play from noon to 6.
Oh,
and then we go out to dinner. I mean, it's a full. I mean, there's a reason why people's wives are playing. And you're just like, or your husband or whatever, because they're just like, well, this is the only day off that we have.
Yeah,
let's spend it together. Playing.
Yeah, that's not too bad though. I might try that sometime.
And it's not bad. And then because we are adults, it's not all Cheetos and fried pickles. You have a fine.
You had fried pickles for gaming?
No, nobody. I don't know what it, I don't know what you people were eating before I played this game. And but the it was but so with a little health. healthier food can also be put forth.
Yes, yes.
Andy enjoys a hummus plate.
Nice herbal tea, perhaps.
Right as we go into our twilight years.
Yeah, exactly.
With our gold dice. Oh. So did you... do you collect dice and different stuff like that?
I've never been a huge... I mean, I will buy really cool dice when I see them.
Yep.
And this is going to sound so sad. I was going to say I'm not a big dice person.
Right.
But they just had a really good deal on Amazon on 100 dice. And I just had to, like... It's like 100
right, so you're
dice
the proud,
for 10 bucks.
What?
Well, they're
score.
All gaming dice.
And they're
and
all...
So, you know, like various D20s, D10s, D12s, D8s.
The D stands for dice, you guys. That's
12-sided dice, 20-sided dice. And I just thought how useful it would be to get these. And so if some of my players do not have their own dice, I could just be a generous game, dungeon master and say, here is your own set of
now,
dice.
The first D&D I ever played was with was this Eberron game 12 years ago now, 11 years ago. I am essentially a god because I'm on 17th or 18th level.
Oh, you mean in the game.
In the game, yeah. Out here.
Yes.
I am a minion. But Andy, whenever he would say, oh, do you need to borrow some dice? All of his friends who have been playing since they were 13 were like, not touching your dice, not touching your dungeon master dice. Get away from me with your skeevy,
tarot
cursed
cards at that point.
Yes.
So what you're saying is I should just leave them in the big plastic bag until my friends come.
They've untouched by human hands. You may choose your own dice
there
and go forward with it.
There you
and
go.
Now did you used to paint the dudes, the characters?
I did, and I'm back into that full throttle.
Oh, really?
I have got individual figures for all the players. One of the players wants to paint their own figure.
Oh, good for them. You're like, my toy, mine!
I'm not lying about this. I bought a second figure so I could paint it.
Yeah, you want to, why don't we put them next to each other? Which one do you want to play?
Well, last year, I made a few resolutions.
Okay.
One of which was to read more books, which I managed. One of which was to do more gaming, which I didn't entirely manage. I've been playing more games. So this year I've just like jumped back into the deep end. I've been painting Warhammer figures, actually Warhammer 40K figures. You may never see me again.
Right.
I've started Warhammer 40K because they've got a lovely beginner set, which comes with like 30 figures. And it was a very nice doable weekend project.
Okay. Wait, you painted 30? No. Not in a weekend.
Okay, maybe not 30. There are, let's say 20.
Okay.
20
and the characters in Warhammer, many moons ago, there was a dork forest dedicated entirely to Warhammer 40K. So I have a tiny memory of John Roy telling me about 40K, but that's all I got. So what are the characters again in Warhammer?
Warhammer 40K is basically space fantasy. You've got the Space Marines who are the human empire, the empire, the Imperium. You've got the orcs, but they're spelled with a K in science fiction.
Okay.
And, you know, orcs.
That's how you know that they're from space.
Exactly. Space orcs.
That's awesome.
Then you've got the Eldar, who are essentially the elves in space.
Right.
But they've got really cool helmets, so you don't really see their pointy ears.
Sure.
And you've got all of these races, but they stopped doing the dwarves for some reason. You don't see the squats anymore in 40K.
Okay.
And basically, I've always been most interested in orcs because I love playing orcs in miniatures games because if they lose, who cares? They're stupid, they're dumb, they're violent.
They're cannon fodder.
Exactly.
Exactly.
It's kind of like, you know, playing the Russians and, you know, who do you want to lose more, Stalin or Hitler?
Oh, right. Yeah. So Axis and – right, okay.
Yeah, but anyway, it's – so yeah, playing orcs is great fun, and I like it because you can never take them too seriously.
Okay.
And so the opposing force is the Imperium just because I like pinning up really cool space marines.
Fair enough.
And so I've gotten – you know, I've done all these up, and I've had to relearn. I used to be a good painter. I haven't painted – figure seriously in maybe 5 years or more.
Okay.
So the first few figures, I applied the paint much too thick and lost a lot of the detail.
Okay.
The next series of figures, I've just been doing them with inks and washes and getting a lot of the more detail is coming out. Stuff I knew from before, but I just totally forgotten.
Okay.
It's not entirely like trying to ride a bike. So now I'm painting up all the monsters for this adventurer and all of the player characters. And I've got so many orcs and goblins and dwarves and things anyway from my old Warhammer gaming days.
Right.
Fantasy.
Well, that, fantasy. Oh, right, that you could just bring into D&D.
Right.
Yeah.
But I like having the miniatures out there. I like drawing out the caverns or the rooms so that the players know where they are.
Okay.
Are but you that's drawing not necessary.
On like a dry erase map?
Yes. I've got a couple of dry erase mats, and I've got my...
Boxes or hexes?
They're squares.
Squares, because D&D is squares.
Yes.
5-foot squares, right?
5. That's right.
Yep. There you go.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And the average character moves 30 feet per turn, and so they can move 6 squares.
6 squares with a double move, sure.
But it's been wonderful. I mean, it's having worked in the gaming industry now close to 20 years.
Yeah.
I have never been doing this much actual gaming since I started. And, you know, you always get the chance to game at a convention or with... You know, but then you'd just rather see your friends and hang out and discuss gaming ideas.
Right, or hide.
Yes.
Yes. One of those two things, you're just like, no, I want to play. Yeah. Is there a place we could hide where there aren't so many people? Well, you're at a game convention, you weirdo. Yes. And it's just, yeah.
But, yeah, so it's been between D&D 5th edition and getting, I've actually had to pare down my games because I was having a big problem for the last few years. There were too many game systems I was interested in.
Okay.
And so that was creating analysis paralysis, and I was not playing any of them. So I'm selling a lot of games.
Okay, just kind of clearing out your game cabinet?
A little bit. I mean, I've got shelves and shelves and shelves of gaming.
What are your favorite board games right now? Are there a couple that you're...
I've been playing a lot of board games because board gaming is so hot, and also it's such an easy way to get some gaming in with your friends. You get friends come over for dinner. We've got a group of couples now.
Oh, nice.
And we all get together every month for a dedicated dinner and gaming night.
Oh,
and
cool.
It's a lot of fun. But also, yeah, just a friend will pop over and you can bring out a board game. There are so many great games at the moment, and I know all. It's amazing because
you go more co-op, or do you go more?
I love co-op. A couple of years ago, I was totally into co-op. I'll do anything.
Okay,
I will be fascinated by a game for like a year, and the games it spawns, and be obsessed with it and try and figure it out.
Right.
Right now, the games I love. I still play a lot of Forbidden Island, which is a great co-op game. You're on an island, and it's sinking. And it's the sense of the island sinking is palpable, and it plays very quickly. And I introduced some friends to this about 2 weeks ago, and we lost the island, sunk.
Right.
And we were on it. We did not get off the island.
And there is tension when you're playing as a group, and you're and there's a tick-tock.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I've seen that one. I have not played it. Forbidden
Camel
Island.
Up is another great fun game. I love the game Camel Up. It's a
how are you spelling it? It's not Camelot.
No, Camel, Camel.
Okay.
Up.
Oh, awesome.
Camel Up. It's a camel racing game. Set at the turn of the last century
in,
I believe, Egypt, colonial Egypt. But you're not actually playing the camels or the racers. You're playing the people betting on the camels.
Oh.
And it's brilliant fun. And it's very unpredictable because a camel, if it lands in the same space, it is Egypt because they're all going around a pyramid. The pyramid itself is the is this wonderful cardboard thing you build, which lets you turn over the pyramid, put it face down, and it lets one dice out at a time.
Oh, okay.
And I love that for a start. So that one die will move one camel 1, 2, or 3 spaces around the track.
Okay.
You can bet on the camels at any time. You can bet who will win the leg, which is when all 5 die are rolled or turned over. That's one leg. So whatever camel's in the lead at that leg, you can get money on.
Okay.
Play money. Play
right.
money, You never play this for shots or anything like that.
Pieces of pizza.
You can also,
last piece for whoever wins Camel Up.
You can also bet on the winner of the overall race or the loser of the overall race.
Is there a trifecta? Is there any way that you can leverage this? Is there a guy over in the stables you could talk to?
There might be. There have been a couple of expansions for this. Yes. But I still just like the basic game so very much. And again, it just changes so quickly, and it's fascinating. It's brilliant.
Okay.
Codenames is another game I've been playing a lot of recently.
Okay.
A wonderful, superb word game where you, two players are the spy masters.
Right.
And you've got teams, two teams. Each player is the spy master for their individual team. And you've got a grid of 25, I believe it is, words laid down. And the spy masters have got a map of these grids of who their spies. So the words laid down could be Berlin, it could be mud. It's sort of like apples to apples green cards. They could be anything. And these are the code names of agents.
Noun.
Yes. Okay. And you've got to get your team to guess all of your agents.
Right.
Without guessing any of the other agents, which gives them an advantage. Or
so it's like Password to some extent, if I remember correctly.
A little bit. It's a little more.
Give too much.
Yeah. It's a little subtler than that, because you can only give a one word clue.
I'm terrible at it. I played it on tabletop. With the Will Wheaton thing.
What? You did?
Yeah.
What
yeah,
was that? I missed that.
Fourth edition, the fourth season.
Oh, has so, that aired?
It either just aired or it's about to air.
Yes.
I can't tell you who won.
No.
I'm not very good at it.
So I don't you know. Played Codenames?
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Yeah, that was the game we played.
Oh, wow.
And then you get a free copy of it. And but I was so terrible at it that I was like,
I never got a free copy of Ticket to Ride Europe when I was on tabletop.
Oh, you got to play Ticket to Ride Europe?
I know.
That's that train game.
Yes.
It oh, my gosh.
Great.
That's a great game.
I played with one of the cast members from Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Anne Wheaton and Will. So it was, like, just terrific.
I know. I've had several... I can't remember everyone's name. Yes. They've all been on the Dork Force, though.
Oh, that's so, what, oh, so a reunion
yeah.
show.
Yeah, well, I've just, I reciprocity. I was yes. like, you may be, of course, yes. I want everyone to be on the Dork Force.
Oh.
So, yeah, so it's Codenames.
Yes. Oh, God.
Maybe if I played it more than once or twice, I might, it's sort of like Sudoku. It's a learned skill to
yes,
some extent.
Yes, it is.
You got to get your mind thinking in the right direction.
Yes. The first game I had was disastrous. I had played it once and I was teaching it to some other people and I thought, aha, I can be the spy master for this.
Yep.
And I focused like a laser beam on three words. And I believe what I said was theater or something like that. And then I totally missed, like, one which was so close to theater.
Right.
That's the one they went first.
Of course.
And it was a disaster.
Yes.
It was a disaster.
All of a sudden, crime flourished.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, yeah. So those are just some of the games I've just been really, really into recently. But there are dozens.
Right. I just bought one when I was in Minneapolis. I think it was called Dangerous Dirigibles or something.
Oh, I've seen that. It looks beautiful.
It was beautiful. Super fast.
Is that by Fireside Games?
Who could tell?
Okay.
Probably some sort of writing on it.
Yes.
Would
yes.
tell me that.
It was by a game company.
It was by a game company because it was in Barnes & Noble.
Okay.
And so it was, you're essentially building a steampunk dirigible and it's super fast. And Andy just played us, we just played a two-person game. And that was really fun. And then for Christmas, I got the Battle of Hogwarts.
Oh.
A deck building game.
Yes.
Which
yes.
Is, I love Thunderstone Advance, mm-hmm. but it's so fiddly to set up, I can't figure out how to set it up. But the Hogwarts Battle yep. of Hogwarts, much easier to set up.
Nice.
And it's also a deck building game.
Nice.
And so I'm on board. And then the other one was something called Mythe. A Mythe, not of Mythe and Men,
no.
but it's Mythe, M-Y-T-H-E.
I think I know of that game.
It's adorable. It looks yeah. like a pop-up greeting card.
Yeah.
And it just has a volcano, mm-hmm. and it has your mice going on a very short road up to the volcano where you have to get past the dragon, who is a tiny wooden figure, to get the silver cheese. Silver cheese done in metal. So
ooh.
Nice toy value.
Nice. Yes.
yeah.
Yes.
But it's the tiniest game in the world. I don't yeah. even know if it's out. Andy got it somewhere.
I know the name. I know the pronunciation.
Right.
It's
fun to say.
It's on the edge of my radar, but yes.
Right, right. And then he asked for several games. I think Isle of Skye,
okay,
which I have
yes.
not played.
I've not played that.
And then something called Seafall.
Yes.
Where
yes.
you, it's one of those tile building games where you just add tiles and make a
Yeah.
Make a land.
Yeah. I've not played that. I've heard very good things about it.
But there's a bunch of games like that, sort of like they're, I think they're little hex squares or whatever, and you build a game.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a golden age of game design.
That's
right now.
Wonderful. And you cannot keep up with everything that's coming out. You just can't.
No, you can't.
I've got so many friends in the industry, and these people are brilliant designers, and like some of them are genius level at game design.
Yeah.
And I just feel so bad. I cannot play all the games that are coming out. And I can't even play all the games I'm illustrating anyway.
Right, right. Well, that's it, because you're just like, no, I want to do the thing.
Yes.
And, sometimes it's – and these are quality problems, obviously.
These are, yes. These are definitely first world game problems. Right. It's very
– there's too many games, you guys. So – but do you notice, because you're, you know, an artist and a graphic designer and all that stuff, is it exciting to see the different kind of art that is in all of the?
I love it. I love it so much. And I will sometimes pick up a game just because it's got really beautiful art on it. And I know you're not supposed to do that, but really,
you're judging a game by it. So, yeah, yes. Why not?
The art is just stunning, and especially if you think of where gaming was at back in the late 70s. And when I say first printing of Dungeons and Dragons, I don't mean the one that was out in most stores. If you go online and you see the first little tiny 3-volume box set.
Yeah.
Now that we're not talking about the red box and those things.
You're talking about something.
This was before those. It came out in a brown box first. That sold out. Then they released it in a white box. And the art in that is just so horrible.
Right. And wasn't he from like Lake Geneva or something?
Gary? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's where. Who grows up in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, unless you're like a mob, was his dad a mob boss?
Only if you visit from Chicago, I think.
Well, that's where that's where they vacation. Yes. And bury their dead. Enjoy your ocean spray, everybody. There's a lot of cranberry bogs in Wisconsin.
But that's why Gen Con gets its name. It's Geneva Convention.
Oh, that's right. Lake Geneva Convention. Yes. So yes. Gen Con is the board game convention in Indianapolis,
and role playing
and all the
everything
80,000 people. One of the things I love about that convention is that everybody's doing instead of going to watch panels and stuff. They're mostly playing.
There are some really good panels.
I'm sure
you go there to play the games, and you'll be in the hallway with your friends, just trying something new.
I don't mind. I mean, I love panels. I love being on them. I love all the things. But I did like that it felt more social, you know? And it was kind of neat because, we all isolate so bad. And so Gen Con is this thing where you're like, well, I'm just going to sit at a table and play with these guys. And so that's neat.
It is. Gen Con is wonderful. It's so big, but I think it still keeps this very special feeling about it in the way that other giant conventions for me just never have.
Right. It could be a little, because it is 80,000 people, if I remember.
Close to that, if not more. I forget. It's just, I mean, I know the dealer's area was so huge last year.
The dealer room must be insane. Just because it's full of games.
Yes.
And then does it also have, like, because I don't remember going to the dealer room at Gen Con.
Oh, wow.
I've only been once.
Okay.
And
I saw your show there.
Oh, I did stand-up.
Yes,
that's
you did.
Right. Didn't I do Crackers downtown?
Something I could not remember the name.
Crackers
that sounds
in Indianapolis.
Like
people get to name their own comedy clubs, you guys.
Yes, Alex, my business manager, and I came to see you.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, I remember that. It was the downtown one, which is now called Jokers, by the way.
Oh,
Crackers moved up the block and opened a new downtown Crackers. And then in where Crackers used to be is now Jokers. It's a fascinating tale of stop calling it. Just call it the Indianapolis Comedy Club, if you would, please. Anyway,
the dealer's area is crazy because there are hundreds of booths, and they go from small self-published games all the way up to major game companies.
Do you ever take the kids?
The kids singular.
Are they too little? Or
She is 8 years old.
Oh, right. Right. That's right. You have one daughter.
She's just starting to really get into gaming. For the longest time, she felt very – like when she was about 5 or 6, we would try some games with her.
Right.
And she got very nervous when it came to winning or losing. So she would like move, she would want to move the figures for us, but she wouldn't want to play the games. Although this was great. And this was after we sold apples to apples to Mattel.
Okay.
She, when she was four, she and her 5-year-old, cousin.
Right.
Played a few Thanksgivings ago. We all played apples to apples Jr. Right. Together, and they loved it. They loved being the judge.
Perfect.
You could just see this little
4-year-old.
Who doesn't
want to be green?
Going, yes.
You're green. Go.
so that was really a neat feeling that a game you worked on could go down to 4 years
old. Have you seen Bring Your Own Book?
I've heard of it. I've not seen it. Yes.
It's currently my favorite party game.
I may have to get this because you're the second person in like a week who's
I've only seen it. I got it at a toy store. My friend owns a toy store in New York, 84th and Amsterdam. You guys, West Side Kids. So, but she said, I never get to play games. Make Andy play this, and give me a report. And so we did. But
trust my arm. Trust my arm.
Exactly. So essentially, it's just like apples to apples, except for that you use either you've brought your own book because you're that person,
yep.
Or you use the found books in the house or place where you're playing.
Nice.
So in our the found books in our public space, essentially the respectable books, are all like the Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings, and then we have some nonfiction, and then we have the classics.
Yes.
And so everybody took one of those, and what you do is there's a middle card, like in apples to apples.
Yep.
And then it says something like James Bond's little known tattoo.
Yes.
And then everybody goes through their book looking for a funny thing or an interesting thing that might apply to that.
Yep.
The first person to find that turns over the timer. So everybody else has like a minute to catch up. And then you win, and then everybody reads them, so there's no secretive part, right? And then the person, whoever's the middle, picks whatever they like. And then, of course, you win that middle card like normal.
Yep.
As soon as anyone wins two cards, everyone moves their book to the left.
Oh, that's nice.
So you don't keep the same book.
Yes.
And so whenever the next person wins two cards in a row, you'd move it again, right?
Yep.
So that was the first time we played it. The second time we played it, and we haven't played it since, and I would like to, we were at a picnic. Mm-hmm. We were at a barbecue. And the only books they had were self-help books and gardening books. So it's weirdo magoo, like whatever anybody has in their house.
Yes. Yeah. No, that's terrific. I've heard very good things about that. So I may have to seek that out.
And I think it's like a nickel. I think it's like $11 to $15 for this thing. And
really?
So it's very cheap. And unlike the green cards in apples to apples, there's two suggestions on each card.
Oh, that's
so
nice.
they just use the car, they use the space.
Yeah.
And you could pick either one.
Nice.
So it's a nice touch.
Excellent. Yeah, so I'm actually working on a role playing game now, which is kind of with a friend of mine, Brett Myers, who is a very good game designer. He does my favorite game of his is Nanook. It's from Steve Jackson Games.
Okay.
And I've got like 4 more ideas, and it's just now a question of getting the time to get these things and get them play tested and work on them.
Is it is it a tabletop like D&D kind of game, or
I'm hoping to come
board
up,
game RPG.
It's a
mix.
It's kind of a mix. I'm hoping to make this a game where the players do not have to know any of the rules. That everything is set out in front of them in such a way that the rules will be minimal and only the dungeon master really needs to know the few.
Okay.
And he can just essentially put the pieces in front of the players and they can do things.
Well, that's the big thing when you first go play something like this is and we all want people to want to game. So you're like, super simple. Takes 4 seconds to learn.
Yep.
Let's do this.
Yep.
Andy's superhero game, the Hero Instant.
Yes.
That it's just free online at theheroinstant.com. Knock yourselves out, Americans or internationals. But you can make a character in 10 to 15 minutes.
Oh, that's nice.
And there's and he did that because I hate making characters. I like drawing there's a box where you can draw your character.
Yes.
I like naming it.
One of the nice things about D&D 5th edition is they've got a quick build option.
Okay.
So if, with my friends who were doing this group with, I really didn't want to get into the minutiae of character design with them and, bore the pants off of them.
Charts.
And these just give you like, if you want to play a wizard, here's the quick build. Here's, like, where you put your stats. Here's
it's a gateway
spells
drug.
You start with.
You can go deep into it next time, kind of thing.
Exactly. And that was really neat.
That is really neat.
But, yeah, so, you know, coming from a party game background, which everything at Out of the Box, and I was a co-founder and co-owner of Out of the Box, RIP, sad. But, the all of the games that that company produced were the idea was to be able to teach the game in a minute or less and to play around in a minute or less.
Right.
And many of the games we didn't get to that with.
Right.
But definitely apples to apples was always the gold standard.
Right. So, and if you aspire to that and it's a 5-minute round.
Yeah, exactly.
Nobody's
yes.
Fiddle and diddle. It's fine.
Exactly.
That's so great. Wow.
So, yes, it's been a really busy couple of months, and it's been so fun, again, just like jumping back into the deep end.
Yeah, yeah. Is your daughter going to play the D&D too, or not yet?
Probably not. I think she and one of the players has got a daughter who's a little younger than Louisa.
Sure.
And I've got this idea that if they're ever around and they're interested, that I would make them sprites who would just be helpful sprites who couldn't
perfect.
Be harmed, so they could
help
the characters and do something like that.
It's like you roll an assist.
Yes. I've got a number of games, role-playing games for kids specifically. There's a game my friends at Monty Cook Games just came out with called No Thank You Evil.
and first of all, I love the name.
It looks great. I backed the Kickstarter. The production values are fantastic. And I cannot wait to try this with Louisa and her friends. I've just not played it yet, so I need to really sort of figure out
how
it's
played. Oh, you want to do a playthrough and then...
Yes, yes.
That is best, especially with kids.
Yeah, with 8-year-olds whose attention span is so known to be so long.
Right.
And there's another game called Adventure Maximus, which, again, is just for kids. And so I'm looking forward to that. It was really neat with my nieces and nephews, taking them through D&D for the first time ever. They've been... growing up, they had their gamer Uncle John. I want to be the cool uncle. I want to be the cool uncle so bad. And so
success.
You would play all these different games with the board games.
Mm-hmm.
And then last Thanksgiving, a year ago. It was over the Christmas holidays. I ran them through the beginning adventure in 5th edition D&D.
Okay.
It's this wonderful, probably the best introductory role-playing adventure I've ever seen published.
Oh, and it's a mod or something,
it's a
pre-written,
a self-contained, pre-generated characters and ready to play. That's the phrase. Mini campaign, and it's really well written. The folks at Wizards did a phenomenal job with this whole package.
That's great.
Yeah. And you just jump right into the action, but you also get role playing elements, and it's not just like one dungeon. It's a series of adventures.
Okay.
And it is a mini campaign. And so seeing my nieces and nephews who ranged the time and age between, 12 and 15, who had never done anything like this before. And my brother who had done this back when we were in school, just getting back into it. It was wonderful seeing this. And so I'm just so excited again to be back to the whole role playing thing.
That's so great. Everybody, hey, Rangers of the Dork Forest, just so you know, I'm talking to John Kovalik, which is @muskrat_John on Twitter. And then dorktower.com is sort of the main, main website, right?
Yes.
It has a webcomic and it has.
Yep. Dork Tower runs twice a week now and I'm hoping to get back up to 3 times a week.
But pretty busy.
Pretty, yes.
Yes.
And so you can find, Dork Tower, there.
Right.
And
then the books and everything.
Yes. We're going to be doing, there are 9 volumes. Collected volumes of Dork Tower out.
What? That's awesome.
Don't you have them? I'll send you them.
I'd
be very happy to.
Well, let's, yeah.
It used to be published.
I'm going to go on eBay and see if I can find that, the first one.
The one with the Gygax.
With the Gygax intro.
One of the most amazing moments of my entire career in the gaming industry was, this would be one of the last Gen Cons in Milwaukee.
Okay.
So this is a while ago.
15?
10, 12 years, something like that.
Okay.
I forget how long it's been in Indy. I was walking back to the Dorkstorm Press. That's the name of my publishing company.
Awesome.
Dorkstorm Press.
I love the word dork, you guys, it turns out.
And I saw Dave Arneson at my booth buying some of my comics. And I ran. I sprinted there. And so she
so
said,
that you could bask.
This man's money's not good here. He gets whatever he wants.
Oh, that's very sweet.
It was it was like just one of the most wonderful moments I could imagine.
Oh,
and I do hope he was actually buying comics. He might have just been stopping to get change. That would have been embarrassing.
That would have been. Oh my God, take them all.
So yeah, we're going to be doing a Kickstarter for a new Dark Tower collection.
Okay.
Hopefully that'll be February, March. Yes.
Yeah.
And this will be the first new collection in like 8 years. I stopped publishing when my daughter was born. I just had too much with the parenting thing.
Fair enough.
And self-publishing was tough and everything else. And I did a good job at it, and I was happy with the comics that were coming out. And
oh, good.
They did well.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just... If there's
it's a whole separate job to publish, right?
Right.
Isn't it? I mean, you're like, well, I've got this down. I can get the webcomic up.
Yes, exactly.
And this whole other thing is just a separate. Yeah.
Yeah.
I get that.
And, you know, with both Out of the Box and obviously with Steve Jackson Games, other people do the business stuff for that. And I get to just draw pretty pictures. So
exactly. Nice. It's just.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I loved drawing the comics. It was just having to deal with the business side of it was just.
You do as much as you can.
Yeah, exactly.
You genuinely, you're like, I want to do this thing. Someone was telling me, Chad Daniels, great comic from Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. He's advertising on Pandora. And I was like, how do you do that? Is that something? What's happening? And I do have a Pandora channel that somebody made, which is nice.
Yes.
And it turns out because it has my name on it and I am a member of Pandora, I listen to music.
Yes.
That I can, because I am the artist, I can send a message to anyone who is listening to that channel.
Oh, so that's almost
creepy. I recorded, what? It is creepy. I was just like, hey, what are you guys listening to me? I'm right behind you. Anyway, I'm creepy with that. Now I kind of want to do that.
This message is coming from inside the house.
Oh, I kind of want to do that. I want to do all of it. But, you know, when it comes to webcomics, Andy reads so many webcomics, and the only one I read is the dirty Sword and Sorcery.
Oh, Olglaf.
Yes.
I love that. It's so well done.
It is so well done.
I don't read many other comics because I can do a joke, which I did 5 years ago, and do it again and not realize that I did it 5 years ago.
Right.
This does not happen often, but it happens from time to time, or sure. 10 years ago or whatever. I do not ever want to read somebody else's comic and accidentally...
Oh, right. Co-opt any of that.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I make it a point not to read other webcomics, especially the fantasy role-playing webcomics.
Right,
and there are some
like
great ones out there, and I just can't read them
Dork
because
Tower
of that.
But since Dork Tower doesn't do a lot of dick jokes...
Yes, exactly. Since I could not draw a pair of breasts to save my life...
Oh, my God. I guess it's a couple and from Australia who do it, or it's a partnership.
Yes.
I don't know if they are a couple, actually.
Yeah.
But whatever it is, sometimes it's filthy and hilarious, and sometimes it's not filthy and
but
also hilarious.
And it's so beautifully drawn.
It's so beautifully drawn.
And it's like you cannot... I mean, it's dirty, but yeah, I would not call that pornography.
No, Olglaf, OGLAF.com. And what about, I mean, the best way to describe the stuff that isn't porny is like the dwarves, they go to the Fountain of Doubt and they take a drink from it. And one of them says, I don't think this is it. Really? And which is a joke that should not, by all rights, make me laugh.
Oh my God.
And yet, there it is.
Yep.
So.
And it is so beautiful. The artwork is just fantastic. So,
but I ordered a hard copy.
Hard.
Get it? I said hard copy. But I ordered the second one for Andy's birthday, which is at the end of January.
Nice.
And I got the first one, and in the packing slip, this was probably 3 or 4 years ago, I got him the first one. The second one just came out. And in the packing slip, it just said, congratulations on your dirty book. And I was like, good for you. Good for you for not even caring.
See, now I do read a lot of comics, a lot more comics.
Oh, you read like hard comics, right?
Yes. Like, so like right now, speaking of that, I've been reading a lot of Atomic Robo.
Oh.
Which just did this huge Kickstarter to get all of their stuff in hardcover. And I picked up every Atomic Robo collection in hardcover. And that's really made me want to bring back my Dr. Blink comic book.
Oh, yeah.
The superhero shrink.
Is there... I think I read Atomic. Andy Loves a Robot.
Yeah.
Who does?
That's probably the main one out there at the moment. I can.
Okay. Yeah.
Unless it's, Vision.
Right. Oh, he read that Vision. Did you read that Vision?
I've not yet. It's supposed to be great.
It is. It was a little too creepy for me, quite honestly.
Oh, really? Oh.
I had to check out. Okay. Lock and Key. I'm there. Rachel Rising. Sure.
Yeah.
Turns out the Vision, with its cartoony graphics, was creeping me out because it was a little Stepford Wife for me. And, yes. I got too invested or something.
Wow. Good to know, actually, because I was assuming it would be just a fun, good time, which is the stuff I like to read.
Yeah, me too.
I want escapism.
That's what I'm looking for.
I will occasionally see something, not realizing how graphic or violent or disturbing it will be, and I'm glad we'll have seen that.
Right.
Rogue One.
No
spoilers.
It leads into a great sequel, you guys.
Yeah, I hear the sequel's going to be awesome.
It's going to be amazing.
They're going to call it Rogue Two.
Rogue Two, space opera.
Yes.
And
Something like Atomic Robo. Oh my gosh, wonderful, wonderful comic I've just been reading called Bandette. Bandette, about a female thief in Paris. The writing is sparkling. The art is wonderful. I think it's online, but I've just been buying the collections. The third collection is out.
Okay.
The writing is so good. So that's the kind of thing I'm really enjoying reading at the moment. Something that's graphically interesting the writing is sharp and funny and quirky. And
do you know the author?
I can't think of it. It's an author and artist duo. I follow them both on Twitter, and I'm blanking on their names.
Right. But it's Bandette.
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to look for that. That's great.
It's so much fun.
Okay. That's all I want. I mean, do you ever read Astro City?
Yes. Kurt Busiek? Love Astro City.
Yeah. It can be dark.
Yes, it can.
It's so beautifully drawn.
Yeah.
And it's so painted.
In the background of one of the Dr. Blink comics is a statue, and it says, I believe it says Kurt Busiek, our founder.
Oh, that's so cool. Is Dr. Blink collected?
Yes, there is a collection. It's out of print at the moment. There's still some copies around, or you can go online. And everything's available, Towers, all the Dr. Blinks, all the old Wildlife comics are available in PDF form from Drive-Thru Comics.
Okay. Drive-Thru.
Yes.
Drthru?
You, yes.
Like it's, yeah.
Yep, Drive-Thru like Comics. It's, and comics like comics.
Right.
But yeah, there's some like great. It's like all across the board. I'm sorry, I've veered from gaming into comics.
Go figure. It's I kept introducing your daughter because I was like, you had a parenting.
Oh, that's right.
You wanted to let me in on how dorky the parenting is coming along.
Oh man.
Off on that for a second.
She is. Anyway, going back to the artwork. One of the games I bought simply because of the artwork is a game called Dragonwood, a very simple little game where you're on quests. And you're collecting cards, and the cards you get, you can use these to fight and beat the monsters.
Okay.
So you get a little bit of like Ticket to Ride. You're trying to get cards either in a series or all of the same color.
Got it.
But it's actually the first game Louisa has really glommed onto, and it's the first game she's asked to play twice, and she keeps asking to play it. So I think the whole fear of winning and losing
might have faded.
At least it's being overcome by the just interesting new games and
right. And I mean, and the thing about gaming that children have to learn and adults, some adults have never learned, is that there's going to be another game.
Yes.
Who cares who wins? I mean, you want to win, but if you don't win, turns out you're going to play it again.
I would much rather lose a really great, fun game.
Yes.
Than
for
win,
sure.
A real asshole-ish kind of backstabbing.
It was the greatest.
I would win a backstabbing game, said the artist of Munchkin.
Right. Well, and that's the thing.
I've only ever won two games of Munchkin in my life. In 15 years.
I have played Munchkin to a standstill where the only way anyone has won is when someone made a dumb mistake. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, pile on. Bam.
I like playing Munchkin. I enjoy Munchkin a lot. But I get ganged up
hilarious,
from the start because everybody thinks because I drew the dang cards, I know how to play the game.
Exactly. Hey, you've got that flash. T-shirt.
Yes.
You know, the T-shirt that gives you a plus one of your shoes or something.
Yes. I even lost a game of Munchkin once where they let me draw my cards when it was my turn if I got a blank card. And I could just not bring myself to draw John Wynn's end of game. Steve Jackson totally could have done that and would have done that.
Right.
And totally so this is why you can tell I'm not a natural Munchkin player.
Right. Right. It's, yeah, I like Munchkin. I like all of those games, actually. He makes a fun – they're funny is what, yes, I like about them, is how goofy they are. And you're like –
the odd thing is they – like worldwide, I get invited to conventions like in Brazil. I went to Brazil and Poland a couple of years ago.
Right.
I go to Italy all the time, Germany all the time. Munchkin is a worldwide thing, which surprises the heck out of me because so many of the cards are based on really terrible puns.
Right.
Like, how can this in possibly English translate?
Yes. Right.
But people just enjoy the game.
Right.
So
and
much.
And you know, the art is, and I'm talking to you, so, but what the heck? We'll lay it on a little bit. It's adorable.
Oh, thank you.
It's just,
I want to go
fun
back and redraw all the cards from like the first three games.
Wow.
Just because it's been that long and I think my art has progressed so much.
I hope so.
And like any good cartoonist or comic, I think a healthy dose of self-loathing is important.
Yes, you got to let that go. Yes. I have an early album that I would like it to be lit on fire. So, but nope. CD Baby keeps telling me, "No, we sold out of it. We're going to need more of those." And I'm like, "You only had five. Why?" There's an album before that Circus People album,
yeah,
that I burned, which is on fire and almost impossible to get. And if anybody ever finds Cake Is Not My Downfall, feel free to rip it quickly because it will disintegrate right in front of your face. Anyway, but yeah, I understand that.
I'm very happy with my art now. I keep wanting, yes, to make it better. And so for Munchkin Oz and Munchkin Grim Tales, which came out, I was super happy with how those turned out.
Oh, cool.
And it does make me go want to stomp all of the old original stuff, which I was rushed. I was using bad materials.
Right.
I was using, I hate to say this, the first like three Munchkin games,
yep,
I used a Sharpie to illustrate because it was fast and I needed to be fast at the
time.
You had
to crank out some serious.
And in fact, with Dork Tower as well. And now I use good pens, good paper, really good art paper, really
right,
good pens.
Sure,
and
you can bring it all up.
Such a joy.
Yeah.
But back in the day, like 15 years ago or 17 years ago when Steve first threw Munchkin at me.
Right.
Oh man, it's embarrassing.
Well.
Yeah, so. But people love it, and Steve doesn't want any of the cards to change because they're iconic now.
Right, right. Like, now the
iconic is French for suck.
Right,
the art,
iconic
only
is
the art.
I'm irritated, and so. But it's, yeah, you can't. We aren't allowed. You know, you created the thing. You got to let it go.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. I've come to peace with it.
Yes. There you go. Sort of.
Yes. Yes. You can tell I'm clenching right now. Look,
exactly,
at my body posture.
I'm just a little bit of a, if I could just, no, hand it to me. hand me the plates. And, okay. So we're almost at an hour, which is,
wow,
hilarious. Yes. A,
wow,
classic. It's I'm, of course, with John Kovalik, Madison, Wisconsin's Dork Luminary, creator of Dork
Tower.
I'm going
to put that on my business card now.
Please do. Please do. I always look for a local Dork Luminary, and you're today's,
oh,
it's a good one. I was psyched because we've known each other for so many years,
yes,
off and on, and
yes,
then the last couple of years, every time I've come to Madison, there's no time. And so this has worked out so great that you were able to stop
this
by for an hour.
This has been fantastic. Yes, and
yeah,
welcome back to Madison.
Thank you. It's four below.
It is.
And I realized why I was a mouth breather during college. I'm like, I need all the air. All the air. And my hairs in my nose are on fire.
It's when actually that is the one level when you blink, when your nose starts freezing. The
right,
second level is when it gets to minus 20.
Yeah.
And when you blink and for a split second, your eyes seem
don't open.
To, yeah. And
right,
that's like, you know, this is just stupid. You can drive to cold. You can fly to snow. You don't have to.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why nobody leaves California, in my theory, is because,
yeah,
they have all of the things. Like,
take me with you.
I know. Well, you could go to the desert or the mountains. I remember when I tried to get Andy to come to Wisconsin any number of times, I was like, it's really pretty. We have all these beautiful forests. It's really rolling hills. And he was like, yeah, have you been to Yosemite? And I was like, oh my God, I'm going to kill you. And I was like, pine trees though. And he goes, uh-huh. Have you been north of San Francisco? We have the sequoias and then we have just normal pine trees. And I'm like, okay, I'll stop. And so January, it's now the end of January,
yes,
when this will go up.
Yep.
And So keep an eye, Rangers, at dorktower.com for John Kovalik's Kickstarter for the next big collection of Dork Tower.
Yep.
And, of course, go out, get Munchkin, get all the things. And it's at @muskrat_John on Twitter.
Muskrat John, yes.
Muskrat John.
With the underscore.
Thank you so much for doing the show.
I'm so glad we could do this. Thank you so much. It's so great seeing you again.
Exactly. You are welcome. And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?